Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, hi everybody. Hey, it's Recruiting Animal. Yesterday, I'm going to tell you how I got to this show. I'm on a different phone because Harry Joyner called me yesterday, actually, and complained to me about my phone. But I'll put that aside for a minute. But it's bugging me. I just want everyone to know. Anyway, yesterday I got a call from J.D. Jason Davis, and he said to me, he said, "What are you calling the show this week?" And he never calls me and asks me before, but it's got something to do with his blog today. So what's the name of the show? I said, "It's called Meet the Losers." He says, "Meet the Losers? Meet the Losers? That's terrible!" I said, "Hey, we're talking to losers, aren't we? Those are the guys from your contest." He said, "Yeah, but you can't call them losers, losers, losers." I hung up on him. That was it. What do I know? A few minutes later, Harry Joyner calls me. Harry, the marketing headhunter. He won the contest. He says, "Hey, Animal, how are you?" The guy thinks he's funny. He says, "Hey, what's the show going to be called? Like I don't know that he spoke to Jason a few minutes ago." I said, "Hey, Harry, it's called Meet the Losers." He says, "Meet the Losers." He says, "Animal, isn't that a bit rough?" I said, "Look, they're losers, aren't they? They entered the contest. They didn't win." He says, "Well, you know." I said, "Look, you want to give him your prize?" He won, remember? Dead silence. "I didn't think so," I said, and I hung up. Listen, people, I'm going to give you a sermonette. There's no shame in being a loser. Life is a contest, and you're not going to win every battle, and you know it. But some people, they don't have the guts to admit it. They like to pretend that they're perfect, but that's the chicken's way of life. The real hero says, "Yeah, I might lose, but no one's going to stop me from trying. Maybe I'm not as smart as Harry Joyner, but that doesn't mean I don't have a right to live, does it?" No, of course not. And we recruiters know better than anyone else. We bring people in, we send them out to interviews, and we know they're going to lose. And you know what? When they start whining, that's when we know they're real losers. So I want to salute the proud losers. The proud losers like Craig Silverman and Heather Hartman. And what's that other girl's name? Pam. Sorry, can't remember your last name. Anyway, those losers, they don't crawl in a corner and shiver when they think they might not win. And when they think maybe I'm not as smart as the next guy or as good looking or even as interesting. They go out and try to win again, even though maybe they never will. So let's meet the losers. Welcome, live in Toronto, I'm the Recruiting Animal, and this is the Recruiting Animal Show! There we go.
The werewolf is neither man nor wolf, but a satanic creature with the worst qualities of both. And do you expect me to believe that a man so afflicted actually becomes a wolf under the influence of the full moon? I'm afraid, sir, that I gave up my belief in goblins, witches, personal devils, and werewolves at the age of 6.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Now, actually, you know, I forgot something. Before I go on and meet the losers, I got to introduce two people to take over the show for 5 minutes. Vin Dieselevy and Maureen Shareeb, the queen bee of telephone sourcing. Maureen and Vin, are you there?
I'm here. Dave, are you here?
He's not there.
He may not have arrived, so let's go off until a little
Let's
bit
go
later.
On. Maureen, I wrote a little song about you.
You did?
Yeah.
I never had that happen before.
Oh, hold on. The other guy's got to wait. This is for
Actually,
you.
Didn't Sade sing a song or write a song? She sang a song.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Wasn't that the last song on the album? This is a song you'll recognize.
That was a long time ago. Okay,
yes,
go ahead.
It was. Come on. Well, Maureen, she works at home, and she's forever talking on the phone. Don't you know that song?
I know that song.
And she'll surely get your name if you're the one she needs to win her game. Maureen's a sorcerer. Here she comes now.
A telephone sorcerer.
Yeah, she's walking by with a client, oh so fine, never to be mine. No matter how I try, come on, that's a first. You know what, I don't like the phone I'm on. That's Harry Joyner's fault. Just let me tell everybody, I'm a little off today, and that's the reason. called me to bug me. But Maureen, did I ever tell you that I met Cat Stevens? Not personally.
No.
I went to hear him speak. He came here to spoke at the Medical Sciences Building at U of T, University of Toronto. And I'll just tell you, I hope, sorry, losers, you're going to have to be on the back burner. I got Maureen on. Anyway, he was wearing third world clothes for some reason. I couldn't figure it out, but he still looks sharp. He's a sharp-looking guy. And should I talk more about Cat Stevens? Is Dee's here yet?
Yeah, tell the story. You started.
Okay, well, you know, he told a long story about himself and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But here's what struck me about him. I can't remember exactly what question from the audience provoked it, but he said it was about how women dress. And, you know, modesty, he said, I don't want anybody looking at my woman! You know what? I got to tell you something. I get jealous. If I'm walking down the street with my girlfriend, somebody stares at her, whatever, I get this feeling in myself all of a sudden. So I sympathize with jealous people, but this guy was just nuts. He was over the top. Anyway, that's my Cat Stevens story.
Animal, what do you do? Do you make her life miserable or go into a corner and stop?
No, I don't. Sometimes depends, you know. I'm trouble. Anyway, I guess I'm going to have to put you on the back burner, but maybe you can start without him. Is it possible?
No, let's wait for him because he has the winner. I don't know who the winner is.
Okay, so everybody who's listening, what Maureen is doing is announcing the winner to the next contest that hasn't even been yet. Is that right?
Yes, well, Steve's going to do the announcing. In fact, he's writing a little a jingle.
And he's got a jingle. He's going to sing, too?
He'll probably sing it because he likes to sing, too. But,
okay.
But he'll be posting it on the Recruiting Animal Blog. No, on the Recruiting Bloggers.
Recruiting Bloggers.
Yeah,
okay,
we'll be posting it on Recruiting Bloggers, probably under your radio post.
Oh, okay.
So when
we're
finished today, you all want to go read it. It'll be up there.
Oh, but, okay, how come the both of you had to do this if he's the guy who's got the info?
If he has the info, what do you mean?
Forget it. Okay, you take your seat. Heather Hartman, are you there?
I am here.
Okay. What's your song?
Sorry, you didn't tell me to come prepared.
Heather Honey, come on. Heather Honey's the right answer. You want to sing it with me?
You go ahead.
Oh, Heather Honey. Come on, don't you know it?
Sorry,
your magic
my time.
Sunshine is. Come on, Andy Kim, he's Canadian. Oh, Heather Honey, your love is so. Oh, fine. Okay, welcome. Craig, are you there? Craig Silverman?
I am here.
You know what? I looked all over the internet. There's no song with Craig in it. How come?
I guess it just doesn't rhyme with anything, but I brought a song for you.
Okay, what is it?
This is the Recruiter's song.
Yes, let's hear it.
All right. You know the song King of the Road?
Trailer for sale or rent.
All right. Engineers for sale or rent. Fees start at 30%. That's it.
That's it. Well, I can see we're headed in the right direction. I have to pat you on the back. You're the first. But I got to ask you a question. Bulldoza said you like to gamble.
This is true.
Is it? Is it at a problem level? Just we're with friends. Come on. You got a problem?
No, I people tell me that I'm rather lucky. So
you're lucky. You win.
I've won a time or two.
Time or two. Also, they said, I think Shally said he basks in the broadband of your radiance or something like that. Those guys really laid it on heavy. I don't know if anybody else remembers that.
But I had to pay Shally good money for that quote.
Okay. Final thing. You look like a wrestler to me. Are you a big guy?
No, I'm about, you know, 5'9", 180 pounds. So.
That's a big guy, 5'9", 180. You look like a tough guy to me. You got a nice looking family, but what are your kids' names? Dean and Martin or something like that? I can't remember. Something funny there.
Clayton and Rudy.
Oh, Clayton and Rudy, but we got a famous lawyer here, like I told you. Clayton Ruby. Famous guy. Anyway, okay, I'll pass on. You know what? I got
Clayton
a problem.
Rudy.
Harry Joyner, are you there? You screwed me up with this phone. I couldn't get myself the right way.
What?
But
what
you stay back. You stay back, Harry. Pam, are you there?
I'm here.
What's your last name?
Clotten.
Clotten, not McClotten.
Nope, just Clotten.
Just Clotten. Do you know the song Lottie Miss Clottie?
No, but trust me, you don't want me to sing.
It's by Elvis. Are there any songs? I don't know any songs about Pam either.
No, it's probably a good thing.
I hear the cottonwoods whispering above. Pammy, Pammy, Pammy's in love. You know, I always feel a bit weepy when I hear that song.
That was lovely.
But it's not really Pammy. Everybody knows it's Tammy, right? Anyway, okay, now Harry's here. I don't know any songs about Harry, but I'm not interested in that anyway. So does anybody have...
Well, you know. I got a song about Jason Davis.
Oh, let's hear it.
All right, here you go. You ready?
Yeah.
Jason Davis with the googly eyes. Jason Davis has a wife three times his size. She sued Jason for divorce. Now he's sleeping with his horse. Jason Davis with the googly eyes.
Didn't you claim to? You played at CBGB's?
Yeah,
is that
was
what
a long time
there?
Ago. That wasn't one of the numbers that was on the set list, though. I, you know.
Okay. Okay.
I don't know.
I got to tell you, Craig wins this round.
I don't know if he sleeps with his horse.
Craig wins,
but he is lovable.
He wins a song contest. Craig,
right.
But I don't have any prizes for you. Okay. So what should we do now? Should we talk about with the winners first? We'll talk about Harry first. Okay. Harry,
yes.
You won the contest because you said you get the lion to lay down with the lamb.
Well,
Harry,
I didn't say that. I said I got my candidates to talk with each other.
Candidates are natural competitors. Harry said he gets his candidates to go out to the interview, and then when they know they struck out, they share the information about the interview with the next guy in line. Is that correct? Is that fair?
Yes.
Now, how do you do that? Because I got two problems with that, and I want everybody to chime in here. We're all experienced people, and you've all made yourselves visible. You can't say that you're not here. Don't leave me alone with this. But when I send out people, I don't usually get a rejection of them right away. They're good enough that they're all in consideration until the very end. Also, I got to tell you, I might be shy, but I don't know how I tell somebody, hey, you struck out. Tell the next guy down what he has to know so he can get the job you didn't get. So you tell us what you do. We want the exact verbiage.
Well, I don't know. The verbiage varies, but it's not complicated. You just tell them at the beginning of the search, listen, I'm going to do everything in my power, my ethical power, to get you the job, right?
Yeah.
But every search is like a little microcosm of the NCAA basketball tournament, right? There's one winner, and everybody else goes home with a T-shirt. That's just reality. Maybe one day I'll start doing searches where there are two winners, but I kind of doubt that that's going to happen. So everybody knows that there's only going to be one winner. And so it's a great networking opportunity for the people who don't get the job and for the people, you know, who are in contention for the position. It's a great opportunity for them to collect intelligence. I work in, I wouldn't call it a small niche, you know, it's e-commerce, but a lot of these people know one another, and I work with the rock stars of this space. So they see each other, do keynote speeches at industry events and whatnot. It's a great networking opportunity.
Okay, so that's one point right there. It's a little different. These guys, they trust each other from previous exposure, even if they don't know each other.
Yeah, they know each other, usually.
Oh, really?
Well, sometimes, yeah, they do. Or they've seen one another speak at industry events. So imagine... what's an analogy that I could use here? Like, they're all like university football coaches or something. I mean, it's kind of like that. One time I went to the Final Four in Seattle, and I went to a bar, and I was amazed. There was like 500 people there, and they were all, you know, famous college basketball players and famous college basketball coaches, you know, yet there were 500 of them. It was amazing, you know. And this is kind of like that space, you know, where there are...
No, I don't know, but I'll take it for granted. You can't
yeah,
be in, you
and
know.
So it's not like I'm doing lower-level, you know, internal audit positions or something like that. Not that there's anything wrong with those searches, but...
He knows I do internal audit searches.
Yeah, or analytics searches or search engine optimization searches or whatever, but it seems to work best at the VP level.
Okay, oh, so we're talking senior guys, and what do they say to you? They say, Harry, that's fine with me. Is that what they say?
That they say, come again?
Yeah.
I've never heard of that. And
really?
I say, you know, well, you'd probably, I mean, I just made the idea up about 4 or 5 months ago. But it's worked like a charm. When I first started doing it, I didn't know how many people were going to go along with it.
Yeah.
But it turns out now that a lot of people have gone along with it, and they like it. And it's weird because people will call me now for searches that I'm not managing. and they'll say, do you know anybody who's in contention or who's interviewed for this job? I'd like to collect some intelligence on, you know, the VP of e-commerce position for whatever, Walmart.com. Do you know anybody at Walmart.com? No, I don't. You know, whatever. But it's an idea that seems to be catching on.
Really? And well, I was going to ask.
I mean, all I can say is, on paper, you know, the idea is fraught with problems. But in practice, it seems to work just fine. Like so much of what I do, you know, it would look crazy on a business plan. But there's a lot of stuff that I do that's very unconventional and orthodox, but it seems to work like a charm.
What about the clients? Now, I have an opinion. I believe that it's always better to give out the questions in advance. So, I mean, the basic questions, so that the candidate doesn't have to start thinking through stuff that he already knows once he's in the seat or she's in the seat.
You mean, so, what do the clients make of this idea?
Yeah, so I think it's a good idea to give them an idea of these guys, where it's going to make for a better interview rather than
I've
cheating.
Never promoted this idea to the clients at all. As far as I knew, they didn't know it was happening. Now, one of my clients, one of my biggest clients, actually, I closed a CIO search for them last year. I mean, this is a Fortune 50 retailer, right? A CIO search and a VP of marketing search for these guys last year. And one of the people in their HR department, who's a friend of mine, saw John Sumser's write-up on Jason's contest. You remember that, where John Sumser said some very kind things about Jason and me, and I was grateful for the coverage. And anyway, apparently these people subscribe to ere.net,
yeah,
and they sent the write-up to me, and they said, hey, you're famous. And so, anyway, they know.
You know what John Sumser said about me this week? He said, I have to extend my mojo. It's not long enough. I'm not kidding, but go ahead. Sorry.
I've never met your mojo.
Oh, thank goodness, but go ahead.
I'm pretty big on the phone.
Go ahead. Continue.
So anyway, that's no, but that's how I do. It's not very scientific, and
they don't
people
find
can always say no, but they don't.
The clients can't tell that these guys have been really well prepped in advance. It's not totally surprising. Well, like if they try to pop something on somebody to
that's not the only thing that I do to really prepare candidates for an interview. And I'm not suggesting that that's what you're saying, but I mean my candidates are buttoned up when they go into an interview. There's a lot of databases that I subscribe to. I pay a lot of money for state-of-the-art research. I mean, my candidates know their shit when they go and interview. And
you
know, my
well.
Clients usually say, I'll tell you what, Harry's candidates really know about the company and the culture and the industry and the function, you know, be it e-commerce or customer acquisition or whatever. They really know their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I prepare them, and my searches, they're not a body count. You know, I don't submit like 10 different resumes for a search. That's not the way I operate. Every search that I conduct is like Rushmore, you know, in the sense that there are typically no more than 4 candidates that I submit, and each candidate solves the client's problems in a completely unique and differentiated way. Right, so that it's not a personality contest. They're just completely different. Imagine the Beatles or something. None was more important.
Well,
than
I got
the
a
other.
Question for you. Remember what I said? We don't. If they're good candidates, the guy doesn't usually write, or the you know, woman who's interviewing them, they don't write them off right away. But what you're saying is that your guys get written off right away, so you know this is either going to move ahead or it isn't. So then they're free to share that information.
Well,
that's
see, here's the deal. You know, I strongly encourage my clients to either move forward with a candidate or knock them out. You know, so to know, because I'm an elephant hunter, right? And elephants like to be shot dead or left alone. And the one thing that's really hard is to drag an A player along through, you know, a 100-day hiring process, because they say, well, look, I'm an A player right where I am, and you're telling me that your client really needs somebody with my skill set and et cetera, and they're not moving forward. I think you're full of it, you know, because their actions don't demonstrate that. So what I do is I strongly encourage my clients to move forward with the candidates or knock them out of the process.
Give me the exact words. What do you say What do you say to this guy?
To my candidates or clients?
Your clients. How do you get them to move ahead
listen,
fast?
You know, I want to make sure that you guys are serious about this, okay? And I know this is going to sound arrogant, and I'm not arrogant, right? I've got a very small circle of competence that's very sharply defined around the edges. I tell these guys and gals that I'm like a hammer, okay? It's priceless if you need a hammer. It's useless if you don't. And I'm a mile deep and an inch wide in e-commerce. And the people that I deal with in this space are the sports stars, the rock stars of the e-commerce arena. And you're going to have to move through the process pretty quickly. And if I see that you're not moving through the process pretty quickly, then I've got relationships with these men and women, and I'm either going to hustle you up or I'm going to move on to another search and I'm going to pull my candidates.
You're tough, eh?
No, it's not really tough. It's like, it's just like being the ball boy at Wimbledon or something. You know, my job is to make sure that good players suit up and get out there and bring their A game, and that the game moves, you know, at a dramatic pace, you know. So much of what I do, I'm a professional storyteller. That's really what I do. And my job is to create a ton of drama around the searches that I manage. And the only way to create a ton of drama around the searches that I manage is to keep them moving. That's so, and it's just a function of managing the client and candidate's expectations, right? So I'm not saying, you know, you have to knock them out in 20 days or 30 days or I'm taking my, you know, candidates and I'm going home. But I'm saying, okay, you tell me at the front end, realistically, how long you expect this to take. 45 days, 60 days, and it's nothing that I have in writing. It's just I rely on the client's sense of fair play. And if you tell them that on the front end and you have a conference call with the hiring manager, and usually there's three or four people on the hiring committee, you know, so there's like a VP of human resources and there's a hiring manager and, you know, there's a line manager and maybe a direct report to the person. It's like the old Miller-Hyman sales model, you know, where there's an economic buyer, a technical buyer, a key influencer, and an end user, right? And so there's the procurement process involves multiple people,
yeah.
And each of those constituencies has to be managed, and their agendas have to be figured out so that you can sell in.
You know what? Let me bring in Craig, because he's a trainer. J.D. Jason Davis always plays this guy up. He's trained 500 people or something like that. Right, Craig?
Yeah.
Still there?
I am.
You're not asleep.
Not yet.
What do you think of this?
Well, first of all, I really I like the place where Harry comes from. I like people that have a my way or the highway type of style. I mean, in this business, you've got to work what's closest to the money. And if you're and I'm not exactly sure of Harry's practice, but it sounds like a contingency-based perm recruiter.
Yeah.
You know, these are people that kill what they eat. They eat what they kill. Nobody's paying them a dime unless a deal's done. So they tend not to let a lot of grass grow under their feet. And, I am a big fan of the, you know, Miller-Hyman, you know, or that type of approach. You know, let's call it just for
strategic selling, what they call it.
Call it strategic selling. Call it, pipeline method and converting, you know, suspects into prospects and working them through a process. And ultimately, you know, what I'm hearing from Harry is a guy, number one, who's got a ton of attitude, positive attitude. He's confident in himself. He's confident in his practice. He's confident in his candidates. And I love that. You know, when I got a guy that walks on the sunny side of the street and always sees his cups as half full, I know I'm going to have a producer. Now, when I take that and I pair it with somebody who's willing to work their tail off and give me 110% effort and work really, really hard, now I've got this killer combination. And when you bring in this third piece, which Harry's talking about, which is the process, I love it. Now,
I've never heard
of
it before.
What's that?
I got the feeling you're setting this guy up for a fall. Have you ever heard of this method before?
I have not heard of this method before. I do like the concept of asking people to do it. I don't think everybody is going to But, you know, if you don't ask, you don't get. And as far as I'm concerned, if I'm your agent and I'm helping you to get a position, and for whatever reason you're knocked out, and I say, hey, do me a favor, pick up the phone and call this other guy because one of my other clients or candidates needs some help, and because of what I'm doing for you, I'd like you to help me and talk to this guy. I think more times than not, if you've got strong relationships, they're going to help you. And to me, it's creative, and I can't see it not working some of the time. So why not give it a shot? Maybe half the time you get somebody to give you a little bit of help.
Perry, he had a good script there too, right?
Yeah, well, the only time I appreciate it. The only time that it doesn't work, and maybe it's undermining my success, and here's the reason that I say that, is because I don't ever get feedback on what these people talked about. They're not required to say good things about the client. Yeah, I mean, they could, you know, somebody who gets knocked out could have sour grapes about the whole process.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? So this is something that I've deliberately done to insert a little bit of uncontrollability into the process, because I maintain an attitude, you know, with these candidates that I deal with, it's a relationship business. It's like being a sports agent. And it's all about maintaining credibility with these people. And I have to say to each of these people, you know, Joe, I'm interested in the welfare of you personally and professionally. And I know that you're all about the three F's, right? Fun, future, and finance in your career. And so, in the interest of full disclosure, you have an opportunity to talk to somebody who interviewed for this position a week ago and got knocked out. Now, you can ask them anything. You can ask them, what kind of recruiter is Harry? And they may say, well, he's an idiot, or he talks too much, or he doesn't listen, or whatever it is they're going to say. I don't know. I'm not in control. But typically I've noticed that I don't get too many counteroffers that I have to deal with. That's not an issue that I lose any sleep over at all. Because when somebody gets to a point where they're given a job offer from one of my clients, they've spoken to a couple of people who got knocked out, there's a 360-degree intelligence gathering and due diligence process that goes on with each of these candidates, and they know what other people are saying about the company and the marketplace.
Let me ask you a question.
Yep.
It sounds, when you said they've gone through, they talked to the people who've got knocked out, do you send the most unlikely candidates in first so they'll be more likely to be able to feed information back to the next guy?
Can't always do that. There is a little bit of, lineup stacking. You know, it's like being a baseball manager, and you have to say, okay, who's my leadoff hitter and whatever. But I can't always do that. You know, I have lots of candidates who say, hey, I understand you're doing a VP of e-commerce search for, Restoration Hardware or whoever. And I'm going to be in San Francisco on the 5th, and I'd like to speak to the hiring manager if that's okay. Can you arrange a coffee or a lunch?
I'm going to put you on hold for a second. Pam?
Yep.
What do you think? Should this guy have won over you? Be honest. You're on the show.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it's probably one of the most creative things. I found it really interesting because I never thought to do this. I do it, but I do it. Like, I gather the information, kind of debrief the candidate, and then I pass it on to the next candidate. But I'm sure there's a lot of information that I'm not getting that maybe the candidates are more candid with each other.
Would you have the guts to ask a guy to share that information?
You know,
would Maureen have the guts to ask anybody everything? Of course she would have the guts.
Okay,
well, what? No, it's a good question, though. I don't think in every scenario I would. I mean, I think it would be a case-by-case type of a thing, but I'd like to try it.
Okay. Craig, do you have any questions for her? I mean, you're welcome to come in here.
Well, no, I'm just saying. I mean, I've been reading Maureen's columns, and there's nobody who can pick up the phone like her. So,
that's Maureen you were talking. That's Pam. But go ahead, talk about Maureen if you want to. I don't care. Heather,
I take it back.
Heather, get in here. What do you think?
You're going to judge Harry now.
It's your chance to get back at him.
All right. Well, I definitely think it's interesting. But my question would be, have you ever lost a candidate of yours to another opportunity that you were not representing that they found out about from one of your other candidates?
Good question. I know that they've submitted themselves and they put themselves in play for other opportunities. And that's a fine question. And it'll happen sooner or later. But see, one of the things that I learned when I was a commodity trader was that, you know, people in a fairly efficient marketplace don't operate in a vacuum. You know, I mean, they're going to find out about job opportunities anyway, and they're going to do what's in their best interest anyway.
Sure they are, but why make it any easier for them? You know,
because
that would be my question. And you're taking money out of your pocket.
I find that the easier you make it for people to take advantage of you or escape from a search or whatever, the better off you are anyway. Because I'm not interested in closing deals that have even the slightest hint of instability to them, right? I only want people who are completely committed to doing the job going to work for my clients. So if there's a hint of instability or a hint that they're not into it or whatever, by all means, you know, let them go. Let them out of the process.
Okay.
I honestly believe that.
Okay.
Because, and here's the thing, I believe that my candidates are an extension of my value proposition, right? Let me repeat that. They're an extension of my value proposition, meaning if they get on site and they're doing the job, even after my guarantee expires and I've taken my money and I'm completely off the hook and the deal is done, but they start messing up in the job somehow, who's the bad guy? Yeah, it doesn't do anything for my brand in the marketplace. So I only want to broker happy, strong, productive marriages. There's no such thing as a win-lose outcome to this or a lose-win outcome. There are only lose-lose outcomes and win-win outcomes, right?
Got the picture.
It's like
no-fault
divorce.
I gotta take some time for these other people. Harry, please. I know you're the winner. Everybody give Harry a round of applause.
All right, I'll shut up.
Okay, who's next? Anybody want to volunteer? Okay, Pam, what was your answer? Were you the one that said you have to know the business, or was that Heather?
That was me.
That was Heather.
Okay, Pam, what did you say?
I just said, you know, what happened to me early on, it was actually my very first client, thankfully, and I was all excited to get this. I think it paid $18,000 a year. It was like a million years ago. It was like a clerk position at a nonprofit company. And one of my best friends to this date had the candidate, and she was a great little candidate, very inexperienced. Make a long story short, the hiring manager loved her personality, wasn't sure that she could do the job, that she had everything that it took. But we talked her into it. We said, you know what, give her a shot. She's going to come in, do these tutorials, so forth and so on. And so she went against her gut. She hired her, and sure enough, 3 weeks later, she called us up, and she's like, listen.
So this is like a segue. I'm going to interrupt because we're getting time issues now. This is a perfect segue from what Harry was just talking about. If the person, you know, has some other interests, he's not interested in them anyway. He's fine with someone else tempting them because he wants them to be certain that this is where they feel comfortable.
Yeah,
you're
totally.
You're saying the same thing,
yeah,
right?
I agree 100% with that because that was good that it happened to me when it did because, over the years I'd see other people forcing placements, you know, making things happen, crossing their fingers and hoping the person would accept. And then, you know, a week later after they accept, oh, you know what, I got a counteroffer, blah, 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 blah. You know, this helped me tremendously because I want to make sure if they take the job that everybody's on board and they're going to stay and you're not going to have a fall off.
Craig, Mr. Recruiting Manager, what do you say? Craig?
You know, I'm a huge fan of doing good business, but at the same time, I got to be honest with you. I think what happens with a lot of recruiters is they don't push hard enough. We don't the nets that we try and cast aren't wide enough. So we go to our clients and say, I'm only going to pitch you, you know, the top two or three guys, and you know, they give us a salary range of, you know, whatever it is, 70 to 90, and we got a guy that wants to make 110, and we don't submit him. And I think that recruiters need to push the envelope a little bit more. I think some amount of fall off is acceptable.
when a recruiter comes to me at the end of the year and goes, I made 20 placements this year and never had a fall off. That usually scares me because they probably should have made, you know, 30 placements and had two or three fall off.
You know what? I actually disagree a little bit with that because I think you can, what I saw happening, and this is just my own perception, I think you can avoid a lot of those fall offs and still push and make deals happen if you're asking questions every single time you're talking to that candidate. What's changed? What else is going on? I saw deals happen all the time because the newer recruiters were afraid to ask those questions. And then, you know, the deals wouldn't happen.
Okay, I like what both of you said. So, Craig, you're saying be creative. But, you see, you didn't say push the candidate. You said stretch the hiring manager on that, right? But what about
candidate? You know, from the candidate side, you know, I like to push the candidate. I like the candidate to be, you know, a guy that's or a person who's you know, going to be, you know, having to stretch in a lot of different ways. You know, sometimes we got to push them, you know, because the commute's a little bit longer than they want. Sometimes we got to push them because the comp is just below what they're looking for, but the opportunity is right.
With the commute. Tell me what you'd say to the guy. You must have an example. Hello?
What? I'm sorry.
I want you to give it, Craig, I want you to give us an example.
Okay, what I would say to a candidate is that you need to focus on the entire picture here. So because of this one variable that might not be a perfect fit for you, we have to also look at the stock options. We have to look at the opportunity, who you're going to be working for. Ultimately, there's four or five criteria that the candidate has to, you know, so to speak, get a check in the box for. So they've got to see that the compensation is right and the benefits, et cetera. There has to be some sizzle around the opportunity or the environment or the team there. And what I try and do is tell that candidate that we need to focus on the entire picture and every piece of the puzzle might not be perfect.
Okay,
and I'll try and get on the move.
I got to butt in. So you're asking, sorry, this J.D. Jason Davis has said, or Maureen said, sending me some email here, but I have to butt in on this. Let me just say, what you're saying is that if somebody's got an objection for one issue, you say, take a look at the whole picture. There's a lot of factors, and some of them outweigh this. Sure, you're going to spend 2 hours each way in the car, but think of all the money you're going to make, or think about the great team and all you're going to learn. Is that essentially it?
I would say essentially that is the crux of it, but where the rubber hits the road is with a candidate and a client where we actually have the best possible strong match. And like Harry said a little bit earlier, what I try and do is I try and make these matches be ones that are marriages and the ones that are meant to be. So you, at the same time, you have to be honest with yourself when you're trying to fix something that's kind of destined for divorce. And to do that is kind of ridiculous, and you have to be true to yourself, true to your clients, and true to your candidates at the same time.
Okay, Heather, any comment before we move on? I want to comment. I'm not pushing you.
No, I'm good.
Because this is a key issue. We'll have to have another show on that issue alone. Pam? Do you have a rebuttal for him? Be tough. I mean, he's got a loud voice.
No, I mean, there's a lot that I agree with there, too. I think every situation's different, too.
But you will coax somebody. You'll try to sell them. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, absolutely.
But
I'm not going to push a fit that's obviously not a right fit, is my point, just to make a point.
And that first experience you had with that young woman who got axed later on, it wasn't a right fit?
No.
Okay. No. Settled. Heather, your turn. You said you have to have deep knowledge of a specific business sector. Is that what you said?
Well, you have to at least have some knowledge. I don't know how deep it has to be. But,
Are you backtracking on me?
No. But what I'm saying is, you know, you can't be afraid to ask questions of either the hiring manager or others in the business. And you've got to understand what that business is, what the company is trying to accomplish, what the culture's like, whether it be in the whole company or just one department, because there can be different corporate cultures or in department cultures. But without that, you're going to be sending candidates to these hiring managers and to your clients, And, you know, they could be great on paper, but if they're missing some of the soft stuff that you've heard about or learned about through your knowledge of the business, it's not going to work. You know, for example, you know, we don't discriminate on age, right? I mean, we can't. But I know that if I send certain candidates to certain big four consulting firms and the candidates are over the age of 50, they're not even going to look at them. So, you know,
I don't know if you should be saying that on the
air. I didn't name names, did I? But I'm just saying, you know, there are certain things that you learn by learning the business and by getting to know the organization that is going to help you in your recruiting, whether it's by submitting the candidates or it could also be unselling the candidates on the opportunity.
Okay, but we have to understand how much depth you're talking about to really make it different. I mean, we're not talking about having an hour conversation with a new client. That's not it. I mean, look at Harry. He told you he specializes. He's very narrow and deep or something like that.
Right.
Mile deep, inch wide.
Yeah,
I agree with that. I mean, so for example, you know, when I started working at an energy company as a recruiting manager for them, I knew nothing about coal mining, nothing at all. And so for me to be able to understand the lingo, understand the different words and verbiage that these folks are using, the hiring managers are using, to be able to ascribe to the candidates what was going on in that industry and how they were going to, you know, work in that industry, I had to go down under and visit the coal mine, and you know, really get an understanding of that to be able to perform the job well.
How long did it take you to understand the coal mining business?
Well, I was there over a year, and I made all of the placements for the year within the first 3 months. So that wasn't good planning on my part, but I would say that it probably took a month to get
up
to speed.
That's all?
Yeah.
So you could be a pro in any business within a month. Is that what you're saying?
I think so, yeah.
Harry?
Some are different than others.
You know what?
I think mine requires, I'm not comparing it to coal mining necessarily, but mine requires a lot of complexity and really good abstract reasoning capability. And there are a lot of industries out there that require that.
I don't know.
Well, I would agree with that to some extent, but I think that is, you know, I consider myself a very good business person anyway.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at my reading list right now, I've got Forbes and Fortune and Business Week, and I mean, I'm up to speed on what's going on, and so that's why I think I'm easy to, you know, to jump in. It's easy for me to do that quickly within any industry. It could be different for other people if they're not as well-versed.
A month, that's not very long. You know what? There's some other people on the line here. Does anybody else in the audience want to say something? Well, I know Maureen is out there. She said we can't hear her. She can hear me. Same with Vindy Zalevi. Anybody else? I'll just give the audience a chance. J.D. Jason Davis, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
You have anything to say to any of these people?
I'm just enjoying listening, but should I get off the line because maybe they can't get on?
Yeah, maybe you should get off and see if Maureen can come on because they're
going to. Okay, I'm going
to
get off now.
Announcement. Okay. Okay, so you know what, Heather? I don't want to say you disappointed me, but you misled me.
No.
I thought you meant like you got to be like Harry. You have to have. In fact, I'm going to tell you something. At the poker in Toronto night, I met Jerry Crispin, the Crispy Critter.
Oh, yeah.
And he told me, we had a brief conversation. He said if he was going into be a headhunter again, I think he said he was one for about 6 months, he said he would make it a cradle-to-grave business. He would get the guys coming right out of school and take them right through their careers, and he would focus on one niche. And I think that Bill Vick told me as well, when he was in Toronto about a month ago, I hope I'm not giving away a secret, he said, you got to specialize to make money. Now, it's open. You guys are very polite. You're waiting for me to say you can speak now, but you can just jump in.
All right, well, I disagree with that.
Anybody else? Pam?
I don't know how I feel about that.
You're a generalist?
You know, I guess I am, but I'm a generalist that wants to be a specialist, but I just am interested in too many different things, I guess.
Like, what does that mean?
So I'm not a specialist, I'm
a
generalist.
When you said you're interested in too many different things, you lost me there.
No, too many different sectors
to
pick just one.
Craig, you're the trainer. Your opinion? Hey, is he still there? Is anybody still with me?
Yeah, I am.
I'm here.
Yep.
Okay. Who's there now?
I'm Harry. Can you hear me?
Is that Maureen?
That's Maureen. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Do you have an opinion?
I don't think you're... I'm not a recruiter. I'm a sorcerer, and I don't think sorcerers need to specialize. In fact, I think they need to be very broad-based.
Really? You know, if you're specialized and if you go to one engineering firm to another, you know how they're structured inside. That's a real asset. You know all the lingo.
You know the lingo, but in sourcing, I maintain that you can pick enough lingo up in the first, you know, couple hours of research that you can do a reason. You know, you can, once you're into a job, the lingo comes more easily for you. You know, I strongly believe in being a jack of all trades.
And you have no opinions about that for recruiters. You're just speaking about sorcerers, right?
I am. I'm speaking about sorcerers overall in the industry. I lean towards being a generalist. But
well, I'm a generalist, I got to tell you. I feel really dumb when I go from one search to another, and I have to learn the stuff. I work with guys, they say, it's not your problem. Tell the guy, listen, I'm not a specialist, you teach me. And I do it, and, you know, I mean, I get the searches done, but it's painful for me along the way. I'm like Pam. I'm a generalist who would like to be a specialist.
Mm-hmm.
That's my opinion. Craig, your opinion?
You know, my opinion is that when you do a search, what's really nice, like if you're an independent recruiter, let's say, and you do a search, you know, in one niche and then you go get another search in another niche, you can't use any of the candidates that you just got. So I like people that work what I call a bridge of activity. And within that bridge, it allows you to get more of your candidates to interview to more people, because my whole thing is, how do I, you know, make money from this? How do I drive placement activity? And if I end up jumping from one thing to another thing to another thing, what ends up happening is my productivity is less. So in a good market like what I think we have today, where there's a lot of demand and there's a low amount of candidate flow, tight candidate market, I believe in being more on the not generalist or specific niche market specialist side. When the market was down and there weren't a lot of job orders and a lot of candidates are available, then I just kind of swing the pendulum and go more of a generalist route to get more opportunities to work on.
That makes sense to you, but yeah, you're right. Like what David Perry said, uses it in the job hunting framework. He says certain approaches are force multipliers. So if you're working a lot of searches in internal audit or marketing or whatever, you can cannibalize your previous sourcing and your previous searches with the next search coming on. Heather?
Yeah, well, there's that, and there's the other important point that you're building a reputation.
Yeah.
Word of mouth. You know, a lot of the business that I get is referred.
Okay.
Right. And I guess in my business it's a little different, because often I'm asked to, be kind of taking the place of a corporate recruiter. So, you know, even though I'm a third party and I'm independent, you know, I'm really an extension of their internal recruiting department, acting more like an internal recruiter. So a little different take on things.
Pam, where are you? Where is everybody?
I'm in Plymouth, Mass., just south of Boston.
Heather?
St. Louis, Missouri.
Harry's in Atlanta.
No, actually, I'm in Toronto today.
Oh, okay. Okay. And Craig's in California?
Redwood City.
I don't know where that is.
California. San Francisco Bay Area.
Oh, okay. Okay. So now it's your turn, actually. You said your entry was cover all the bases. Am I right about that? And that was specifically sort of for a recruiting manager that you were speaking to. Would I be fair in saying that?
Really, my focus was what I call inspect what you expect, and it was a control point. I don't think recruiters do a great job of controlling their hiring managers or controlling their candidates, and they leave too much, in general, up to, you know, luck of the draw. So my whole mantra is constantly, you know, control, control, control. And you've got to be driving the ship, and you can't leave things uncovered, because that's when your deal breaks. And you know, at the end of the day, you're really trying to, you know, fill the position. I got a client that sent me an email today. She said, I have 108 internal positions to fill, and to say that these are urgent would be way under telling you what the situation. I mean, these jobs needed to be filled months ago. So to say that there's a high level of pain with this client is true. And that's what's happening in the marketplace today. So if we just go around and start submitting candidates and stuff, what ends up happening is nothing happens. Nobody gets a job. No fees get paid. And no pain goes away for the client. So I like having a system and a process, making sure it's follow through, doing things according to a set, staged, process or system that is proven to be successful to generate placement activity.
Okay, you got to be concrete with us. Well, first of all, none of the people we're talking about today, they are controllers. You can't say Harry doesn't have control of his candidates and his clients. Absolute. I'm impressed. Heather and Pam sound like they're very confident about what they're doing. Pam says, I ask a lot of questions. Am I right, Pam?
Right.
You think you're in control, right?
Yeah.
You have any weak spots? Handoffs or?
I'm sure I do. Who doesn't?
Craig, ask her a few questions to test her out.
Okay. When you're working a search, do you tend to submit your candidates one at a time, or here's the three top candidates? How do you submit your candidates?
I always submit one at a time. You know, I think probably my biggest weakness absolutely is time management. There's just not enough time in the day.
That's not the
case. Okay, I'm not a big fan of submitting one at a time because it's kind of like a waitress that comes over to my table and I say, hey, can you get me a glass of water? And she goes, gets me that. And then she comes back and says, can you get me, a fork? And then they go and they get you that. So I like the saving steps model for a couple reasons. One, I can come in, and I think Harry alluded to this, that he has a small number of candidates. I prefer to submit them in a block, and I prefer, if I can, to set up a block-style interviewing process to where you're going to meet my three candidates, one at 1, one at 2, and one at 3 next Thursday afternoon. Rather than the onesie-twosie approach.
I've actually had some good success with that in the past for junior-level positions. Not so much on the senior-level searches.
You know what? I'm going to challenge you on that myself. I like to send in a first-guy trial balloon. Then they can say what they like about them, what they don't like, and that helps me in the rest of my search.
Well, I won't argue with that. There's nothing wrong with that. But I'm not going out and doing a whole search to find my trial balloon. I could probably find one of those in, 5 minutes in my database. Or, it might even be the most marketable candidate that I was pitching, that resume when I called to get the job order.
Okay, let me just put you on hold for a second. Maureen?
Yes.
Still there? I want you
yes,
to hang
I'm
up
here.
And get Steve Levy to call in.
Okay.
He sent me an email. He's waiting. And
you want me to hang up?
Yeah, but give him a call. If he's not listening, tell him to call in so he can do his shtick before it's over.
He's trying to call in.
Yeah, but there's too
hear.
Many people on. So you're the audience. These other people are the panel. I'm sorry.
Okay, so I should hang up and have him call in. Okay.
That's gotcha. I'm going to try that.
I'll do that right now.
Okay, sorry.
Bye.
Okay, so I'm going to throw it open to you guys. Anything you'd like to discuss before we bring on Steve to talk about the next slew of contestants? Dead silence?
Just try it.
I want to know why we didn't see it coming that Billy Donovan was going to not go to the Magic.
Uh-huh.
And rescind on accepting the offer. I mean, as recruiters, how can his agent have let that happen?
You know what? You're out of my ballpark. Anybody else want to take
Actually,
that up?
Yeah, you know what? I read something about that, and it sounds like they pushed him. They pushed him for a commitment, and he wasn't ready to give it, but he gave it. But
who's
he didn't
Billy Donovan? I don't know.
Head coach of the Florida Gators.
Okay, Florida Gators. Okay. Do you guys all know this?
It's been in the news.
Well, he went from college to the pros, and then
right.
he decided he didn't want to go to the pros.
Right.
Oh, what, now he's back with Florida?
Yeah.
Did he go back with Florida, and they took him back, basically? So the whole thing was just like a bad dream, if you're a
exactly.
Florida alum? Gosh, that's worse than a counteroffer.
He
yeah.
took the counter.
Yeah, huh. Yeah, well.
So anyway. This
interesting.
Is very interesting.
What was his beef with the pros? This is a good case study in counteroffers. What was the beef with the pros?
You know what? I'm going to have to put an end to that. Is Steve Levy there? Somebody just came on. Is Vin Diesel Levy there? You know what? Let's keep going then. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to announce the winners because I don't know. I know them, but I don't know the whole shtick. So let's finish our conversation. Is Billy Donovan the most interesting thing we can talk about for the next 4 minutes?
We could talk about the Red Sox.
The Red Sox. You know, I got to tell you, there's a lot of girls who are sports fans in the recruitosphere. Is that?
No, the reason that I bring it up, seriously, it has to do with real recruiting, is that I don't know if you guys have read this Larry Noble's book, Search and Placement, you know, but Larry Noble says in the book that the candidate's reason for leaving must be specific and professional, right? And so, you know, that's what it's got to be about. It can't be about a lower commute or whatever, because all of those current objections may change with the counteroffer. But a professional condition isn't likely to change with the counteroffer. And I'm just curious, like, what was the professional reason that he decided not to go coach the Magic? And who managed the search? Was it just a bunch of alums? Does anybody know this stuff?
I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't dug into it that deep yet.
Gee. But I wonder if collegebasketballrecruiter.com is still available.
You have to write something about it. Okay, parting words, Craig.
Well, I was real excited to be here on the show today. Thank you very much for having me, and I'm getting ready to jump on an airplane headed to Palm Springs and going to be speaking at the California Staffing Professional Show on Friday and Saturday. There'll be about 400 people down there, so looking forward to that.
What's your topic?
I'm doing two topics. The first one is on how to build a world-class team, and it's all about recruiting, hiring, training, and motivating recruiters, kind of an owner-manager track. And then I'm going to be doing a presentation on why candidates say no to working with you or turning down offers, as well as why a client might say no to the opportunity to work with you when you're attempting to negotiate or market.
Thank you for singing a song. You got guts. Next.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Pam, final words, predictions?
Nope, just appreciate the invite to be here. I had a lot of fun, and I'll be
you
got to
get a song. Before you come on next time, a song.
Okay, I'll work on it.
Heather, parting words, predictions?
Just thanks a lot for the invite. It's been fun.
You guys, come on. Didn't Jason tell you to prepare?
No. He told us nothing except the dial-in number.
Okay, next time. Next time you'll be prepared. Harry, parting words, predictions?
No, I just think that, you know, your mojo will continue to grow in stature.
My mojo.
And legend.
Thank
as
you.
You continue with these recruiting animal shows.
These
so,
recruiting
you
animal
know, stick it out.
Shows. I have to learn to control the guests better, I think. Anyway, that's it. I also have to learn how to operate the music. So let me see. One, two, three, go. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.